On this week's episode of the Ortho Talk podcast, we have Akhil the Real Deal Sharma, who is now an MD. So congrats, Akhil. If you remember Akhil from previous episodes, he was one of the first medical students we had on talking about his role in the match. And he was in the middle of a research year while he was trying to match. So we do talk about that at the end, but we also talk about his residency and how that's going. So give it a listen. Hope you guys enjoyed. If you like our episodes, catch any of our older episodes on our website, orthotalkpod.com. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at orthotalkpod or shoot us an email, theorthopodcast@gmail.com. Please leave us a 5-star review if you like what we're doing. If not, let us know what we can do better. Without further ado, Akhil, the Real Deal Sharma.
Hey, can we time out? All right, all good dudes, stop what you're doing. This is time out. This is the Ortho Talk podcast. Today we are doing a real conversation with an illustrious guest. Surgeons today are Asif Khalid and Jay Chen. Antibiotics, ANSEF, of course, what do we even ask? Fire risk, high due to lit conversations and explosive topics. Any questions or concerns? Nope. All right, we can go. Incision.
Yo, yo, yo. We've got with us a special guest for episode number 48. We brought back Akhil, the Real Deal Sharma. Man, it's so great to see Akhil again. So last time we saw him, he was still a medical student, but I think he had matched. So this year, our other medical student that was applying, shout out to Brandon Holder-Reed, he matched as well. So we're two for two matching, 100% match rate on the Ortho Talk podcast. So if anyone wants to match in orthopedics, just come on to our podcast. That's the ticket. So Akhil is now probably 70% or so through his intern year. Is that right?
That's right.
How's it going? Are you loving it?
Yeah, I'm definitely in it. You know, it's good. I think I have 3 more months. We ended like end of June, and then our chief graduation is like June 10th. But we're starting to get a little bit of like PGY2 responsibilities now in terms of like daytime consults and stuff. So that's been pretty good too.
What's it compared to before you started? How's it been different, or has it been pretty much what you expected?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, some of it we were told beforehand, like, you know, like, oh yeah, you're going to work a lot harder. You're going to have to like read a lot more. And obviously nothing in med school really prepares you for orthopedics, because my baseline knowledge of residency coming in was basically as if I just started med school all over again in terms of what I was able to contribute on a day-to-day basis. So that part I kind of expected going in. But it really is just a lot more like you don't know what you're going to expect until you actually start. So like I didn't know how to throw on basic splints or casts until residency started, and now I feel pretty confident doing most things in the ER. Obviously I have a lot more to learn, but I think it's really just like a pretty steep slope up, and then it sort of got plateaus.
Remind me where you're at again.
I'm at St. Luke's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Nice.
You feel like that, if I remember right, like COVID kind of trashed your rotations, right?
What are my rotations in terms of what?
Like aways and stuff?
Oh, yeah. So, like, we didn't really get a chance to do aways and stuff because my year was, like, the COVID year. So, yeah. We did, like, aways, like, virtual rotations, which I don't really think are that useful. But now I think the current fourth years, like, for example, this year, they were able to do 2 or 3 away rotations in person. So, I think that's slowly going back.
Do you feel like that hindered you your first couple months of intern year?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. I think there was definitely more of an expectation, especially from like the fours and fives, that we were able to do a lot more stuff because we had seen it. But I think there was definitely a catch-up period. So like midway through the year, I think we were kind of where we were supposed to be. But the first few months, especially the first few times I was taking like consults, I definitely had a lot more. I definitely spent a lot more time reading like fracture, like handbook of fractures, and then ortho bullets before actually seeing the patient. So I think that sort of has, we're like back up to speed on that now.
Jay, have you noticed the same thing like on your end?
What's that?
Have you noticed the same thing like with your current interns, like the first 6 months or so?
Yeah, I really don't work with them too much because I got a PGY5, and then when I'm on call on weekends, I have a whole team. So from what I hear, they're all doing a good job, but there's a spectrum, you know? So pretty much as usual. I haven't seen too big of a, I haven't seen a huge drop off or anything like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of standing out as a medical student as a fourth year is just about like your attitude and if you can manage to not be annoying while still being there and working hard. And those skills don't always transfer 100% to residency. Because as an intern, you still do, you know, all the scud work and all that stuff, but it's probably no longer enough just to stand there not being annoying. So there's a little bit more of an expectation at that point. What are your off service rotations? Tell us some of your non-orthopedic rotations.
Yeah, so we had to do 6 months of off service rotations. So we did emergency medicine, anesthesiology, radiology, surgical ICU, general surg like ACS, and then we did, what was the other ones? I think it was just two more like gen surg rotations, but like not ACS. I think it was just like colorectal and cardiothoracic.
What do you think about the usefulness of non-orthopedic rotations? Because when I was a student, the residents, like they did like 3 months of ortho and 9 months of other stuff. And then when we went through it, it was 6 and 6, which it still is. Is that a good balance, or do you think it's pretty much useless, close to useless?
Well, I think some of it was useful. Like, I think surgical ICU is probably useful, you know. Anesthesia was just a joke for us. Like, I think we showed up like a couple days, and that was about it.
I was out of state for like 28 days out of the month.
Yeah.
And nobody knew.
I was pretty much the same. I think you had to do like 10 intubations or something, and then you're done. So,
or just show up once and get them all checked off.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
That wasn't really much. I mean, it was nice to have a break too. I think I took like step three during that month. That kind of worked out. We had burns. Burns was like our worst rotation, I think, of residency for a lot of us, because it was just you're managing like a PD ICU and a adult ICU at night on your own. I think theoretically there was a fellow somewhere, but like, I never saw him. That was a terrible rotation, man. But
I mean, I remember one of the fellows, he used to go like, no, those are pretty bad. I guess what I'm trying to get at is like, as bad as burns was, and I think we probably broke, you know, 80 hours consistently on burns and, you know, managing really sick patients. How much did that benefit us? You know, like, I don't think any of that carried over.
I think it's a very poor question, you know, because like, think about the 6 months you had non-ortho from intern year, what actually translates to your day-to-day today? Like, not much, you know, like a lot of the ICU stuff, even though we learned it then, that's changed like a ton, you know? And honestly, we don't manage ICU patients usually as a primary service. So it's almost always a hospitalist or the, you know, as part of a trauma team or something like that, at least where I am, you know, in the community. Anesthesia, like, I don't really do anything with anesthesia, you know. Even the stuff that you could theoretically do, like some people will do their own blocks or things like that. You know, that's something that you could possibly learn from a rotation like that, is spending time in the block room and learning how they do blocks. I mean, that's conceivably something you could do on your own. But I didn't really do any of that. I guess I was naive at that point. But like, yeah, all the, the ABCs of trauma is like your ATLS and BLS. If you're not at a big trauma center or a orthopedic, or you don't take like level one trauma, usually you don't really need to know much of that, you know, outside of the basics of it, which most everyone is comfortable with, because you have to recertify it every 2 years or 3 years or something. I don't know. It's a long answer.
I say we condense it to 4 months. I think we should do like, I think trauma is useful. I think maybe like plastics. I think I don't even think we need a radiology one because we see x-rays all the time. We read those. We learn how to do that through the course of residency. But like trauma, plastics, I think even like a, I think a medicine service would be useful, believe it or not, because as much as we consult them for everything, it'd be nice to know a little bit more about pre-op optimization. And for the times that medicine refuses to take patients on their service, it'd be nice to know how to manage their, you know, diabetes if we have to, other than just hitting the sliding scale button. And maybe one more service, maybe a for fun service where we can take step three, like PM&R or something really like, you know, pretty chill.
So I thought the first four rotations at Keel State were pretty good, but then you got to like colorectal and you got to like something else that I don't remember, but didn't make much sense to me, but like anesthesia, ICU, trauma, I forgot what else you said, radiology. Those all kind of made sense to me, you know?
Yeah, anesthesia could be the chill service. Yeah. Are you learning a lot of Keel on those services?
No. So similar to you guys, anesthesia was kind of like I was not really there. And it was also my first rotation in July. But it was also good because a lot of times they thought I was a medical student. So because I hadn't gotten my badge for like the first week. So a lot of the times they were asking me like what I want to go into, and I'm like, I don't know, hopefully orthopedics. Like, okay, well, you know this person, they would just bring me up to my program director who I also hadn't met yet. So he's just like, what are you guys talking about? Like he's that was a good way to get to know him. But yeah, I didn't show up. We didn't have any requirements of like intubations or blocks or anything. So I kind of just like watched them do a few blocks and then did I think three intubations and then that was it. I like didn't show up the rest of the month. But EM was kind of useful, I guess, because a lot of the reduction stuff they asked me for. So that was a good way to get some reps in that way.
And that'd be a great rotation, I think.
Yeah. Trauma was useful too. The first month I was on trauma, I didn't really know anything besides ATLS, but we were like running codes, like running traumas by ourselves. But then the second month, I'd had a few more months of like taking consults and stuff like that, like taking call. So I was more useful in that sense to avoid putting extra work on my twos and threes who are on call. So that was kind of nice. But the other rotations, like I think it was cool to learn like ACS and colorectal and stuff, but I don't think it added much value to me beyond just general knowledge.
We had a vascular rotation. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was fun. Cool. Were we on that rotation together, Mo?
No, we had. I think we switched off from each other.
Like nights and days? Well, I just remember us like hanging out in the workroom trying to start up a podcast. Like, like a fantasy sports podcast. I mean, that's like when we tried to start it. I remember trying to get Jared to do it as well.
But, we weren't on it together. It was only one of us at a time.
But yeah, both of us were
probably, on trauma now. Or something.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Anyway, that was a long time ago. Holy cow. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I think maybe 6 months of non-orthos. I don't know. Maybe too much. But how are your ortho experiences going?
Pretty good. So we do, like the interns run the floors. So we are pretty good at that. We did a sports rotation, which I think is pretty cool also. A lot of ACLs, rotator cuffs, meniscal transplants, which is pretty cool. And then we did, like when you're on call over the weekend, like it's just you and the attending mostly because we don't have fellows here. So that was a pretty good experience also. And then I think one of the benefits of being on call as often as we are is just like you get a lot of reps doing things. So I feel like that's been pretty advantageous as well.
What's your favorite case so far that you've done yourself?
I did a TFN completely by myself last week, almost completely skin to skin. That was pretty cool.
Was your upper level like guiding you through it or like were you?
Yeah. I mean, they were scrubbed in. It wasn't like it was just me. I didn't call a time out or anything like that. But I pretty much did the case. That was pretty cool.
Was it short? Nice.
Sorry?
Short or long?
Short.
Those are nice.
Yeah. It was pretty quick because I'd only ever done long nails before that. And then I was surprised, like, how quick the case went and like how you didn't really have to ream very much.
Yeah. What's been the hardest part?
The hardest part of residency so far? Yeah. I think just balancing time. I mean, that's probably what most residents would say, but I think it's true. Like trying to, you have to like, so it's like, for example, we have like fracture conference every Monday. So they send out like the email the night before. So it's like making sure you're like prepared for that. So you get pimped on Mondays. And then we have like daily education. So like reading for that, but at the same time, like, you know, keeping up with your general ortho reading, studying for Sep3, maintaining like friendships and relationships outside, like getting enough sleep, like all those things have been more challenging at the beginning of the year. And like getting into that rhythm, I think has been the most difficult part, but then you get used to it.
Have you taken Sep3 yet?
No, I'm taking it in June.
Oh man, why so late?
I was not motivated. Like they stuck me with all the easy rotations off service and stuff in the beginning of the year. And I just did not feel like studying.
That's why you should have done it. I did mine as soon as I saved on mine for my first easy rotation. So yeah. I just like knock it out while it was still somewhat fresh. Just get it out of the way.
Yeah, looking back, that's probably what I should have done because right now it's like we end on 3 months of ortho straight and then it's PGY2. And I was like, damn, this is not an easy thing to do. So now I'm just like spending like about 2 hours a night just like on top of all the other stuff, just like studying for Sep3.
Do you think, and Mo, you can chime in too. Do you think it's better to study for Sep3 like Akil's doing 2 nights or 2 hours a night over a long period of time? Or do you think you can just take like a week off and just cram it all in?
Honestly, dude, I don't remember. That was so long ago. I'm the wrong guy to ask. I maybe did like half of the UL questions and I think I barely passed it. So
yeah,
you should probably ask someone else. I don't know.
I took it at the end of SICU. Because SICU was a pretty chill service for us, actually.
I did the same thing. No, yeah, just like during the day.
Yeah, because you're sitting there on our SICU service. We only were assigned like one patient.
Yeah.
So literally, like I had my one patient. I sat after morning rounds. I sat there for the morning and just did some questions, and then at noon or shortly after noon, they would let us off. SICU was just, so for us. Burns was hard and neurosurgery was hard. Trauma was like average and vascular was average. Everything else was like pretty easy. But SICU, and then I took it at the end of SICU. I took like 5 days off right before. And so I basically studied really hard. By really hard, I mean I studied like 3 out of those 5 days. And the other two, I couldn't make myself study. Yeah. And then like for a lot of SICU, I would do like, I don't know, like an hour or two a day, but that's what I put it. And then I scored like, I passed, but I scored like 30 or 40 points below my Step 1 and Step 2. So it was like, it was kind of funny just to think about how poorly I did, but, and then you just need to pass. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm just trying to pass this. I'm just been like, yeah. Very from med school.
Y'all think it, I don't know. I always thought it was a stupid test once you get into orthopedics.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're ever going to ask me about pediatric skin disorders, but I got to learn them now.
Yeah. Also remember there being some like ortho questions on there that the right answer was the wrong answer.
Yeah. So, I remember that too.
Yeah. It's like, and then it all made sense. Like why, like primary care doctors are so bad at orthopedics. So, but yeah, stupid test.
You feel ready to like transition to next year? Like, what's going to be your biggest change? I guess is it call? Is it like pagers, responsibility? Like, what's your second year like compared to your first?
Yeah, so second year is a little bit different compared to first year. I mean, I know it varies program to program, but for like here, second year is when you actually have to start taking like call during the day regularly. Like we sort of already transitioned to that as interns now because it's the first year there's three of us. So right now our system is we have one person as the main like floor intern and then another person who's like helping out with consults, but they're all like also on their PM radiology rotation. So it's kind of like half and half. But next year it's just gonna be one intern like per day who, while they're also on their other whatever core rotation they're on, they also have to be responsible for like daytime consoles. So that'll be more interesting to try to like figuring out like which things to see are like more urgent, like if it's an open thing or if it's a reduction that needs to be done. Like obviously you'd have to like leave clinic to go do that now versus like this is like probably just arthritis. I can see this like at the end of the day, kind of thing. So triaging is going to be important. And then you're on call a lot more because like the current interns are obviously not ready to start helping you out with that yet. And they, two of them won't be in the call pool at all because they're off service. I think also we have like indications conference where you kind of have to like present cases you're on, and like basically get, it's supposed to be like mini board prep, I guess is like what the thought process is, but turned into just like second and third years, like going up there and just getting like pimped by attendings on like every minutia of the case. So that'll be something that I'm going to be responsible for pretty soon. And then there's like M&Ms, which I will also be participating in. So it's just, and then you have to like be ready for education stuff in the morning as well, like daily readings and stuff. So I think it goes from like being somewhat responsible for everything that's going on around you to like all of a sudden like a heightened responsibility. So I think that is something that is gonna take some getting used to.
Do you like being pimped?
No, no, I don't. But I think at this point it's just been like, I mean, the good thing is like, it's not a very malignant program. Like the Chiefs will like definitely expect you to like know some things, but if you don't know it, it's kind of just like they make fun of you a little bit. It's not like, they don't do it to the point where you cry or anything. So that's been nice.
JD?
Yeah. Huh?
You pimp?
Do I pimp? I only pimp like when there's a small group of people. So like in clinic, if it's me and my resident, or sometimes if I'm lucky in TGC clinic, I have two residents. But really just when it's like a small group of people. I don't really like pimping in front of like large group, because then if the resident doesn't know the answer, they not only does it like, you know, if you get pimped, you don't know the answer, and then you go home and study it, or you feel like it should be something you need to read about. And that's like a positive thing, I think. But if you pimp in front of like the whole department and the chairman, the program director, and all your co-residents, and you end up looking like an idiot, then it kind of adds shame to all that. So, and shame's not always a positive thing. So I don't pimp in large group settings, but in small group settings I do.
I think that's fair. So I guess there's different styles of pimping, right? Like you can ask a bunch of like facts, and a lot of those probably don't matter, you know, like who was the inventor of this instrument, or like, you know, stuff to just like make people feel stupid doesn't really serve anyone, right? But I think the more valuable thing that at least that I got was whenever people would force me to kind of talk through my thinking on things. So like indications conferences and M&Ms especially, like why'd you do this instead of this, or what were you thinking when you did this? Like that's the kind of stuff I think that would actually prepare you more for like real life, not just for boards, but also for like this everyday practice of medicine, because that's really what you have to be able to do, I think, once you're out, is kind of think through why you're doing something the way you're doing it. Because a lot of times it's not a right answer, right? It's not like, yeah, every now and then you get a chip shot IT fracture that gets a nail, but a lot of times there's a bunch of gray in whatever you're treating, and there's no like textbook answer to it. You just have to kind of figure out what works best and why you think it works best. So I don't know. I think that I had some of that in, I think mostly fellowship is when I got a lot of that. But some in residency too, that was probably the more helpful thing that I got.
Yeah, it's also for me, like, since I work with PGY5s, most of whom have no interest in foot and ankle surgery, it's kind of stupid for me to pimp them, because they're, you know, it's not really, I don't know, if I were to ask them about some random paper for like how it's rooted is that I know they wouldn't have read, or you know, there's no reason they should know that paper. They're not going to get anything out of it that's actually useful. So when I'm around like my chiefs, I don't usually pimp at all. And we just talk through cases together. It's much more collegial. And then when I have like a junior assigned to me, that's when I do the pimping, because I can pimp them on, even if they're not going into foot and ankle, there's still things you need to know to pass their exams. So I can pimp them on those like more simple things, I guess.
But not even just for exams, like most of those, most residents are going to end up in a general practice, like at least a little bit of a general practice, you know. Not everyone's going to be subspecialized. So even if you're like a joints guy, you'll probably still fix an ankle fracture here and there, right? Mm-hmm. But you'll probably know like some of the danger structures and like things like that, or
yeah,
you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you pimp your med students, Akil?
No, not really. I just feel like it's unfair. Like a lot of times they're just happy to be there and I don't want to be the reason that they're not. So I don't do that.
That's a good reason.
Well, I remember as a fourth year, like one of the ortho interns would like make me do just a bunch of scut work. I'm like, dude, you're literally like 6 months ahead of me. Like, come on. Yeah. Like you're not that far ahead.
Yeah, no, because like when I thought about my fourth year med school, like the interns that I like the most are the ones that like treated me like they knew that they were only 6 months ahead of me and not like some kind of like God complex. So I don't know. And also just like, it's not that far away for me to feel like inadequate or to feel like I don't belong here, especially if I'm like doing an away rotation somewhere I don't know anyone. So a lot of times like when the fourth year like happens to like hang out with me that day, I just try to like ask them like how they're doing or whatever, like what they have, like the program and stuff like that. And we just go from there.
Do you make them call you Dr. Sharma?
No, not them. Not medicine.
There's some like interns I've seen, they like become new interns and they're so proud to be, they're so happy that they're doctors. They just make everyone call them doctor. Yeah. Like they'll correct the medical students. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's Dr. So-and-so. It's like,
I remember we had one of those when I was there.
Yeah.
Oh my God, man. That's like, I don't know. I mean, I see both sides. I guess you earned it, so you can do it, but also come on. Like, come on.
The only time I'll refer to my doctor Sharma is if I like go on the phone to like call a patient, so like patient's family for consent or something, just so it adds a little bit more like credibility. Otherwise, I don't know. Like, because most of the people I interact with are much more superior to me in like the hierarchical scale of medicine. So for me to refer to myself as Dr. Sharma and they're like a 10-year attending, I just feel like they automatically see right through that. So
Same. I only have patients call me doctor, and everyone else I work with at the hospital, they don't have to call me that.
Really?
I
mean, call me your emperor. Staff doesn't call you that?
Huh?
Your staff doesn't call you that?
They do, but I don't like ask them to. They just do because I guess they might be more comfortable with it, you know?
Go ahead.
There are staff that knew me in residency and they would call me Jay sometimes, and I'm okay if they still call me that, you know?
Yeah. Like I'm the same way. I don't like make anyone call me it. I don't introduce myself as doctor, but like, I think most will do it out of respect just because.
Yeah.
I don't like harp on it. I don't get pissed off if they don't. It's just, I don't know. It's like a debate, right? Like, this was on, it's been like this, I think, since like the last year or two specifically. I mean, it's always been like that, but like, even like anyone who has a doctorate, like making people call them doctor this, doctor that, doctor, you know, whatever. Even if you're like, you know, just a doctor, and you can be a doctor in anything, and you're technically a doctor. And there's some people who really, really like just love it, and good for them. I mean, if you really work hard to get it, sure. Make people call you, but I don't know. I'm just not one of those guys, I guess.
I think you see that meme online. It's like there's like a picture meme or whatever, and it's like about a girl and a guy who haven't seen each other in a long time. Like it's a girl's like ex-boyfriend, and then he's just like, "So is it Miss or Mrs.?" And then the girl's like, "It's Doctor, actually." Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen variations of that. You know.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I can't. To each their own, but I think it's you get a little more sense of collegiality with your peers if you don't kind of put yourself on a pedestal above them. And I don't know, I think that might, at least in my head, at least in my experience, it kind of lends to a more cohesive work environment too, you know, when people aren't like watching their every step around you because they're scared of you. I don't know, maybe I'm just
Now, from my perspective, like my sports rotation, when I was in clinic, like the first day I would go in and like see a patient, I'd say like, "Oh, I'm Dr. Sharma" or whatever. And then I'd go present to the attending. We'd go in and the attending would be like, yeah, so Akil was telling me, and the patient would just be like, who's Akil? And
I'd just be like, oh, the real deal.
Yeah, so the patients who hadn't listened to the podcast were not aware of who I am. So I guess the ones who did didn't have to ask that. But yeah, so then I just automatically had to like start all over. And I just stopped doing that after that point because I was like, I know the attending is going to just not call me doctor anyway. So why not just like skip right to that?
So that's what I'm still struggling with, though, is with patients, because I don't introduce myself with doctor to patients. But then like maybe 10 or 15% of the time, they'd be like, so who's the doctor? Are you the doctor? You're just like, yeah, I'm the doctor. So yeah, I don't know. I haven't found my style in that regards yet. But
I do, because I mean, just like kind of what you were saying, I still have a lot of patients who, even after we had a 15-minute discussion and you know, I introduced myself as a doctor, they're always like, aren't you too young to be a doctor? Or doesn't you look a little young to be a doctor? And I feel like if I don't introduce myself as Dr. Chen, they'll just assume I'm some, like, I don't know, some intern scum or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't, maybe you should introduce yourself with your title. Like, I'll usually introduce myself and then introduce my scribe, but I don't introduce him as my scribe. I just say, this is Devante. He helps me out here in the clinic. And then they always assume he's a med student. So like, how long are you in school? He's like, oh, I work here. So I was like, I don't know. If you're a patient, like, how are you supposed to know? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
If you don't research and Google or listen to the podcast of your doctor before you go in there, then you're not going to know who they are usually.
It's funny too. My chief residents that are with me, they don't want to be introduced as my resident or a doctor. They want to like just be in and out. So they want me to introduce them as like my assistant or something. Like they're like, I don't want to have the responsibility of being a doctor. Just call me assistant. So, I'm like, all right, this is my assistant.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. I don't think there's a right answer. Just everyone's got their own way of doing it and teach their own.
So let's say one time, like 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I was at Disney World with my family. And it's pretty late at night, like 10 p.m., 11 p.m., and all of a sudden I get this idea to start a book about like the 10 rules of residency. And I text Mo pretty late at night about this idea. Do you remember, Mo?
Yeah, I remember. We wrote part of it?
Huh?
We wrote part of it, I think.
No, we just outlined the 10 rules, but we never actually started writing it. So Keel, you're here, 7 or 8 months in. All right, let's get your top three rules of residency. What advice do you have to entering interns? And like real rules, not stupid stuff like, I don't know, do a good job. Study orthopedics.
I think, the first rule would probably be just don't be late. I think nothing like shatters your credibility, like showing up even like 5-10 minutes late to something where your basic expectation is just to be there at a certain time. Because then you just automatically get labeled as like lazy or like not trustworthy or whatever. And you didn't really deserve anything to get that reputation, especially like earlier on residency when people don't know you yet. And that goes for like anything, like clinic, OR, pre-op, like anything. Definitely don't be late. I think the second thing, especially if you're an intern coming in, is just like, get to know the culture of your program first, and then see how you fit into that. And like most things that seem foreign right away or like first thing and like when you start, sort of become like second nature to you later. Like, why is this person like acting this way? Or why is this person getting treated this way? And you're like, oh, okay. Like that's just who they are. That's just their like, but within reason, like if there's something that's like bothersome, if there's something that's like you want to talk more about, then I would say like, give it a few days, see what's like going on, and then talk to the respective person about it. Most of the time you will realize that's just like how the way things are, and like it's not like meant to be one way or another. And then the third thing I think would probably be, don't be hard to work with. I think is probably the, actually let's move that to number one. Like I'd say don't be hard to work with is probably the most important thing. because a lot of times people like ask you for a favor or like try to switch call with you or like try to like see if they can like help out with like something in the ED or something in the OR or something. Even if it's not like your responsibility or your role, I think one of the best things you can do to be a good resident is like just offer to help and like definitely be there. Like a lot of times you'll end up putting in more time or something maybe than you expected to be there that day. Like let's say you were expecting to leave at 6 and but then something came in at 5:45. Don't make the like night person see it. Like you should offer to help out. And then even if that means staying to like 7, 8 p.m., like you chances are you're probably not that good at doing it anyway because you're an intern. So you'll get the reps and like learn how to do it better. And also like it makes you look like you're helpful and makes you like more approachable and likable. And I think that's definitely something that will carry you far in residency and like give you some more grace, even if you don't deserve it. It's just having the reputation of being affable and helpful and, you know, easy to work with.
So those three, I've already forgotten one or two of them, but sounds like affability, and one of them was don't be late, so I guess we can call that availability.
Yeah.
And then what was your other one that you said?
The second one, I think, was, so don't be late, and then I can't even remember. I was so caught up in number three.
All right. We're gonna say that you said ability.
Yeah.
All right, cool. What do you have to add, Mo? Do you have any rules to add? I think two rules to add to that.
Yeah, go to yours.
Okay, don't trust anyone. That's even yourself. I don't know. People told me this when I started, and I think in a lot of situations, you know, when hospital is supposed to be like, you know, team environment, everyone's supposed to be, you know, centered on patient care and taking care of the patients, but that's not the case in real life. There's always like personality things that come up and some people that will sabotage you, or either purposefully or not purposefully, and sometimes they make you look bad just out of incompetence. So basically just double check, you know, if you trust someone to do work, do something for you, you probably have to follow up on it, because if it doesn't get done right and your attending finds out that something didn't get done right that you were supposed to do, and it turns out you had someone else try to do it, you know, that only makes you look bad. And it's not okay just to say, oh, I let someone else do it and they messed it up, you know? So really very early on, you know, I would say just don't trust anyone, even yourself. And the even yourself part, you know, did you really do that dressing change yesterday at 11 p.m. or whatever? And sometimes you don't quite remember. So double check yourself as well. And just at least do that until you become like a third, fourth year. You know, at that point, you kind of have to delegate. But at least when you're an intern, try to take care of most everything yourself. And whatever you delegate, you have to double check it. Then you have to double check yourself as well. So just don't trust anyone, even yourself. And then the other thing is first impressions really matter. I think your first 6 weeks or, you know, 2 to 3 months or whatever, your first whatever block of time you have, pretty much sets your reputation for the rest of residency, unless something drastic comes along to change it. So basically, if you can start out, you know, the interns that are starting out in a few months, if you can just do the, you know, pretend like you're on an AI for the first 2 or 3 months and just do what Akil was talking about, showing up on time, being helpful, being easy to work with. If you can make, and having a great attitude, if you can make a great impression your first 2 or 3 months, that can carry you through a long way. And if you make mistakes later, people are more forgiving of those mistakes. But if you start off rocky, if you start off like forgetting stuff or talking back to your upper levels or being late to stuff, and then people start talking about you, it's really hard. Once you're on the radar, it's really hard to get off the radar. Even if you're solid after that for a couple of years, that perception of you can stay around for a while. So the two things I would add, you know, in summary, just, you know, don't trust anyone, even yourself, and just really start off solidly for the first couple months.
I'll throw two more. First one is kind of a continuation of your last one, is that don't be the one that complains about work. So like if you're in the OR or you're in clinic and you get pulled to do like a consult or you get pulled from OR to go cover a clinic. Don't be the resident that complains about it and, you know, throws a fit about it because you feel entitled to your case. Like, just you go where the work is needed to be done, get the work done, and don't make a fuss about it to other people. I mean, you can stew on the inside or stew to your friends, but like, around other people, that stuff picks up fast, and you can easily earn a reputation for being one to avoid work, and nobody wants to work with those kind of people. And then my second one would be to just be honest. Like, everyone's going to make mistakes at some point. And most of the time, your chiefs and definitely your attendings can pick up bullshit like a mile away. So if you try to like pawn off on, oh, it was because this nurse didn't update this thing and that's why this happened, just own up to it, you know. Or if you're like sitting in conference and you don't know the answer to a question, don't try to, you know, just talk your way out of it. Just own up to it. Most of the time, they're not going to say anything, especially in like an M&M, you know. If you know you made a mistake, we all know residents that will refuse to admit when they're wrong. And those residents get a really bad rap and they get drilled during conferences because they will not admit that they made a mistake. Versus if there was a mistake made, and honestly, even if it really wasn't your fault, if you take ownership of it and just do it, most people will respect that and just kind of, you know, leave you alone and let you learn from it. So those are my two.
I've got a couple more now that I've had time to think about it. So this is a acknowledgement to Corey, who first said this to me, Corey Janney. It has to do with like always being nice to people, but no, I know you know this one too, but you know, you can be a really good resident and really nice and you'll get through. You can be really nice and actually pretty poor as a surgeon or slash resident, and you'll still get through. You can be really mean, but if you're really talented, you'll get through. But what you can't be is not talented and mean. So it's like a 2x2 box. And, you know, basically if you don't think, even if you admit to yourself, you're not the most talented surgeon or whatever, but if you're really nice to everyone and you consistently work hard, you'll get through. So then what else? There was a couple more I'm forgetting because I'm getting old. So I can't hold on to more than one or two thoughts at a time at this age. Gosh, why don't you go, Mo or Akil? Any more?
I'd say one more is just make time for your family and your friends, you know?
Oh, that was it. It was going to be to have an outlet because, I mean, especially on some of the busier services, you're working all the time. It's important to have something to take your mind off of work, like whatever it is. So for me and Mo, we played basketball and, you know, exercise. And even for like an hour or two, a couple times a week, just for that time to not think about the hospital and not think about your patients. It's really nice. Yeah. I had one more, but I forgot.
It'll come to you in a second.
Yeah, it'll come to me in a second.
What about research? Jay, do you have any advice on research?
Yeah, if you have a research requirement and I think most programs have like a one project requirement. Just like get that out of the way, man. Get that out of the way like your first year and a half or 2 years and never have to think about it again. And then submit it to like every conference you want to go to. And if your department is willing to fund those trips, like take those trips, and they don't count against your vacation because they're like approved leave of absences. So they don't take away your vacation time. And then if you can go with your friend, like me and Mo went, those are some of the funnest times of residency. It was getting to go, you know, they'll send you on like a 3-day trip and your whole responsibility is to give like a 5-minute talk. And for the other, like, you know, 2 days and like 23 hours and 55 minutes, you can do whatever you want. So it's paid for. So it's like, it's awesome. Get your research done and submit it and just enjoy that time off.
Yeah, I would second that. Like, I got to go to the academy this past year in San Diego and I just had a poster. So I like didn't even really have to be by it at all. So I just got to hang out in San Diego with my co-residents and some friends from med school who also showed up there. So and it was paid for. So I highly recommend that. Shout out to Parekh. That was great.
Oh, that was Dr. Parekh's project? Nice. Yeah. Are you still doing research for him?
I have like a few pending things from that year that I'm like just submitting, but like no, nothing really new.
All right, slap my name on it.
Yeah,
give me send me those manuscripts. I'll edit those manuscripts.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll do that.
But in terms of like finding research, it's kind of hard unless you really care about research. You know, there's some people that care about research and they can think of their own projects. But for most residents who probably don't care much about it, just find an attending who has a track record of getting published and then ask them if they have any like low hanging fruit to get done. In my experience, if you're just trying to get research done so you can graduate, stay away from like prospective studies because they're a pain in the ass to actually get done. Retrospective chart reviews are okay. Biomechanical studies are okay as long as your department will fund the cadavers and the implants. Because if they're not willing to do that part and they want you to apply for funding, 98% chance that project is going nowhere. So that's what I would say with research.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say a lot of attendings definitely have one or two projects they've like just meaning to get pushed for a while that just like haven't gotten any traction due to like their own level of interest or like the resident maybe dropping the ball. So I would say there's always an opportunity if you want to do it. And especially like the fours and fives who are like on their way out who have like projects that are lagging that are maybe even like partially done that they just need someone to like bulldoze a little bit of work through, I think are easy ways to get involved. But at the same time, if you don't really want to do a lot of research, I think, yeah, like most writers only have one or two requirements, if any. So getting that out, even as an intern, like I've gotten a few easy things out this year. And then getting your other co-residents to help you out with it too. So like you kind of all get your names on papers, but then you split the work like 3-4 ways, I think is a very easy way to get rid of that. So.
All right. I thought of my last rule of residency I wanted to say, because you mentioned like co-residents. All right, so there's like the saying about like, if you're in a school of fish, you want to like stay in the middle somewhere. And that doesn't mean like don't do a great job and don't do your best, whatever, but like don't stand out, especially for like the wrong reason. So like, you know, like I think my class is a really good example of that. We were all just kind of like all of us were in the middle and we all advanced as a unit. Like it really worked out that way. So, you know, you don't want to be on the negative side. You don't want to be the one resident who's always getting questions wrong when they're pimped. I think all of us got a lot of questions wrong, so therefore we were all like in it together. But it's also tough to like, if you do truly have a passion for knowing every fact about orthopedics, don't be annoying about it and like make the rest of your class look bad, because that doesn't help you in your 5 years of residency. So just stay somewhere in the middle and try to get along with your classmates and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's a good rule. Let me backtrack one. Because, Akhil, you did a research year. Looking back, or I guess now the climate, there's kind of like this idea that a lot of people need to do research years to get into orthopedics. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think it's just going to keep happening now. Because, like, step one is pass-fail. So my own program director at the beginning of the year, when we talked about that briefly, he was telling us, like, now he's going to care a lot more about extracurricular, school name, who writes your letters, things like that. And like for a lot of people, unless you're like are matriculating from like Harvard, Yale or wherever, then one good way to get people who are well-known to write your letters or to do a research year and do a really good job during your research year with one or two attendings who get to know you well. I think the other thing is just the sheer volume of applicants. It's like really hard to stand out, especially if the numbers don't really matter anymore. So I think one hard metric that's going to be there is like publications, posters, and presentations. So for better or for worse, I think it's going to be a bigger trend into people having to like find some way to like stand out, and research is definitely going to be one avenue to do that. So I think a lot of people are going to be taking more research years now for ortho, for any competitive specialty, really.
Would you say like anyone that's not in like the 80th percentile or higher should really consider like a research year? So what do you think that cutoff is? Is it everyone?
Yeah, I don't think I don't think it hurts anyone to do one, but I think, yeah, I mean, definitely if you're in the 50th to 60th percentile, probably around there, you want maybe want to start considering doing one, as well as someone who just wants to match into a very academic program. I think they would also benefit from doing one because there's always people who graduate from like top med schools, but they didn't do a lot of research. And so maybe some upper level programs maybe are not thinking that they want to end up at that place. So I think if you already have an idea of what kind of residency or what kind of practice you want to have, and research is a big part of that, then I think doing your research here as a med student definitely sets you up better than if you hadn't done it. It's also hard, right? As a med student, it's hard to find time to do meaningful research when you're like doing every all these other rotations and going through step one, step two, NBME shelves, all those things. So I think if you're passionate about research or you feel like that's going to be a part of your future, then a research year is really one of the only ways to do that.
What about like doing like an MBA year instead? I did an MPH year. I thought it was a, well, there's a lot of thoughts I have about it. But I think, what about like doing an MBA year?
Yeah, so I know some people who did an MBA year and then they also did research on the side that year. So kind of like had a dual function. And I think that's also super useful, especially if you want to do some more business or financial parts, or like just do private practice or be someone in industry, like some people at like Duke that we worked with, for example. So I think, yeah, I mean, if that's something you're interested in, that's super useful also. But I don't know of the utility of that versus researcher. I don't know which one would be like more advantageous per se, but I do think that that's one more way you can like set yourself up.
Yeah. I think if I could go back, well, first of all, I would never go back. I'd stay where I am now. But if somehow I had to like, if somehow I woke up and I was like back in time and I couldn't change my career path and I was doomed for this career, but I had to take a year off to do something, I did an MPH, but I'd probably do like an MBA year.
Yeah.
Versus a research year or an MPH year. If I had those three options, I'd probably do an MBA year. Mm-hmm. So if you have to take a year off to do something, to listeners out there, I mean, once you get out and you practice and you're actually seeing patients and you work within a hospital system or a private practice or whatever it is, you just find that you're so lacking in kind of the financial and economic aspects. So that's what I would do.
I probably agree. I think MBA is useful, but I also don't think you need an MBA to do a lot of the business side of stuff. I'm sure it helps, but a lot of that you can kind of learn on your own too. But if you have to take a year,
yeah,
make it count, right?
Yeah, if you have to take a year, exactly. But yeah. All right. Well, I think we're close to an hour. Mo sleeps at like 8 p.m. nowadays.
Eastern time, buddy. Takes
I'm still up till midnight, pretty much like every night.
I don't know how you function with that.
I have to because of the kids. I have no choice. I can't sign my notes until they're asleep. All right. So, all right, Akil. Now that you're a real you're an RD now, real doctor. Yeah, RD. So, Akil, the RD, real deal. That works for real deal, too.
I thought maybe you were going with it, but I guess.
No, RD, real doctor, also real deal. So, Akil, RD, Sharp. Akil, the real deal sounds better. We're not going to abbreviate. Do you have a new favorite bone?
No, I'm going to stick with talus for now.
You think you're going to do foot and ankle?
I don't know, but it's definitely way higher in my differential now, or differential, way higher in my priority or like possibilities than if I hadn't done the year in foot and ankle. I think it's a pretty cool field. And definitely the talus, because we're on our foot and ankle block right now anyway. So I spent a lot of time thinking about that.
Is Dr. Lockman, is he the dude?
Yeah, Dr. Lockman and I have been hitting it off. He like loves talking about Duke foot and ankle. So I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I'm just trying to ride this wave.
Yeah, that's perfect. All right, keep riding the wave. All right,
yeah, well, he's actually giving a lecture tomorrow.
Yeah. Wait, he's giving one or you get?
He's giving one tomorrow.
What's it on?
Alex Valgus.
All right. Just remember, the answer is not always MIS.
Okay.
All right. Cool. Thanks for coming on, and great catching up with you again, man.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.